From the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. The Trump administration is reassuring state governors they will be reimbursed for at least part of what they spend as they attempt to contain the coronavirus as it spreads throughout the U.S. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis said Vice President Mike Pence told governors, do what you've got to do. Federal spending is being fast-tracked in Congress, where bipartisan negotiations are nearly complete on $7 to $8 billion in emergency funding. State officials say they need the money for a wide array of expenses, including protective gear, housing, and transporting those under quarantine, overtime for medical workers performing lab tests, and public information campaigns. The grandson of a major donor to a group that supported Alaska Governor Mike Dunleavy's election has ended his contract with a state corporation. Clark Penny says his participation had become a distraction. Penny last year entered into a contract with the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority. Some lawmakers questioned the nature of the sole source contract and whether Dunleavy was involved. The authority's executive director is Tom Boutin, and he told a House subcommittee he never spoke to Dunleavy about Penny or the contract. Boutin signed the contract with Penny. He said Penny confirmed Tuesday that he had terminated the contract. Wells Fargo says it won't finance oil development in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. The company's announcement follows similar policies against Arctic drilling adopted by Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan Chase, as well as a string of European banks. Wells Fargo says it will not directly finance oil and gas projects in the Arctic region, including the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. The language leaves open the possibility that the bank could indirectly fund Arctic projects by lending money to oil companies that operate in the region. The Gwich Inn Steering Committee, the Sierra Club, and other environmental groups have been campaigning for banks to divest from Arctic fossil fuels. In the 2017 tax bill, Congress ordered the government to auction off drilling rights in ANWR. The Interior Department has not announced dates for those lease sales. Election officials say an initiative that would raise taxes on Alaska's largest oil fields has enough valid signatures to go before voters. The proposed ballot initiative would raise the minimum tax and eliminate oil tax credits for Prudhoe Bay, Kuparuk, and Alpine. It would also require oil companies to publicly report their revenues and costs from those fields. Gail Fanumiai, the director of the Alaska Division of Elections, says the initiative has met the two requirements to go before voters. One, the group backing the initiative collected enough signatures from registered Alaska voters, and two, enough of those signatures came from at least 30 House districts. Fanumiai says the division will continue to review the remaining signatures and then forward the initiative to Lieutenant Governor Kevin Meyer for certification. When the initiative would appear on the ballot depends on when the Alaska legislature wraps up its work. If the current legislative session ends by April 19th, the initiative would go on the August primary ballot. If it ends later, it would appear during the next scheduled election. Also, Fanumiai says if the legislature passes a bill that is substantially similar to the proposed initiative, then it would not appear on the ballot. Supporters of the proposed ballot initiative say oil companies aren't paying enough in taxes and their measure could bring in another $1 billion. But those opposed to the initiative say it would hurt the industry and make investing in the state less attractive. A lawmaker says a fact-finding trip on the state of the Alaska Marine Highway System found vessels in poor shape, low crew morale, and a lack of leadership. As Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, that's all according to Representative Louise Stutes, who recently visited the ferry system's headquarters in Ketchikan.
Kodiak Republican Louise Stutes co-chairs the House Transportation Committee. She and an aide flew to Ketchikan to inspect the state's ferry fleet.
It's very sad. It's just very sad to see what has happened to our marine highway system.
She reported her findings on Monday morning to the Capitol Press Corps.
It's inconceivable to see the dereliction that has occurred in the maintenance of these vessels, and I don't know how to refer to it in any other capacity. The captains are frustrated, the engineers are frustrated, the crews are frustrated, they're abandoning ship, literally.
By that, she means veteran crew members are retiring early or finding other jobs, as some have been without paychecks for weeks. Regional service was abruptly suspended in January after the only mainliner running broke down. Representative Stutes also accused the Department of Transportation of downplaying the damage to the ferry Malaspina. The ship has been tied up without a crew since late last year. That's despite the advice of engineers, who warned the ship could be damaged by the elements if not properly laid up. By all accounts, freezing temperatures in January caused some of the ship's pipes to burst while moored in Ketchikan's Ward Cove.
We were told that there was a slight pipe bursting on the Malaspina and that there was just a little bit of water damage.
That's the official version from the Department of Transportation. But during her inspection of the ship, Stutz and an aide say they personally saw at least 10 staterooms with standing water.
And as we went from room to room, you could walk on it and it was squishy. The carpet was wet from water. So it wasn't just a little insignificant leak. It was a flood. And why? Why did they tie that vessel up and allow those pipes to freeze?
Coast Alaska filed a public records request in February seeking a month's worth of maintenance records. The agency replied that those records don't exist. A broader request was filed last week seeking answers. It remains pending. In a statement Monday, the Department of Transportation said wet carpet is still being dried, and it says the Malaspina could still be returned to service if it's needed. But that wasn't the impression Stutz got when she was on board.
Clearly, they have no intent of running that vessel again.
The Kodiak lawmaker also raised questions whether the regional shutdown of the Marine Highway was necessary. She says crew members expressed frustration that the state was paying for two other ferries to be moored in the Vigor, Alaska shipyard rather than put back into service.
We had the Kennecott and the Tustamina pulled out, sat down there in dry dock for 2 months. The shipyard had no work orders, but yet the state is paying $90,000 a month to have those vessels tied up for no good reason. They could have been operating.
Transportation officials didn't specifically address this point, but in the statement, the agency said both ships were due to begin their annual overhauls in January and that the Marine Highway didn't have the budget to bring either ship back into service temporarily. Stutz conceded to reporters that the ferry system's woes predate the Dunleavy administration, but she says the governor's response to the shutdown has been inadequate.
And it just seems like it's not been an emergency for some reason. You see all the pictures of these rural communities with no food on their in their grocery stores and having to charter small airplanes to bring in food and diapers and milk. I mean, that's outrageous. So what do? We form another committee.
Governor Mike Dunleavy has appointed a working group to advise the administration on the future of the ferry system. Representative Stutz is a member of that 9-person group whose recommendations are due in late September. This month, the state chartered an Allen Marine tour boat to make passenger runs to several villages. The ferry Taslina is also slated to come back online this month in Upper Lynn Canal. But mainline service with connections to the lower 48 aren't expected to resume until mid-April. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
State taxes on motor and marine fuels would double, and registration fees for electric and hybrid vehicles would rise under a bill passed by the Alaska Senate. The bill passed 12-5 on Monday and goes to the House. The bill's sponsor, Senator Click Bishop, says the measure would generate additional funds that could help to address transportation infrastructure and maintenance needs. Senator Shelley Hughes of Palmer previously expressed concern about the impact on residents in her part of the state, many of whom have commutes. The Alaska Department of Public Safety says reports of felony sexual offenses are up nearly 20% across the state, but are declining in the southeast region. Juneau Empire reports the department released its compilation of reported felony sexual offense numbers from 2018 last week. The department says more than 1,762 offenses were reported in 2018. Reports of felony-level sex offenses increased 19.5% in 2018 compared to 2017, while the number of reported victims increased 23.5%. Western Alaska reported the highest rate of offenses statewide, while Southeast Alaska reported the lowest rate. Just one state Office of Children's Services caseworker is responsible for three Southeast communities unconnected by any road. As KSDK's June Leffler reports, the social worker's caseload is spread between Petersburg, Wrangell, and Cake.
There's about 300 school-aged kids here in Wrangell, and Adiesco gets to talk to any and all of them on a personal level. She's the school district's counselor. She can help kids get through a bad day they're having, and that can, on occasion, stem from neglect or trauma.
And sometimes to support our kids, that means we need outside resources like an OCS worker.
That's Office of Children's Services, the state agency charged with protecting minors from abusive and dangerous situations in their home life. But when a situation is most urgent, ESCO says it can be nerve-wracking.
And when I have a student or a family that I know is in crisis and still having to wait 24 hours for a response, it's a scary situation.
Wrangell lost its locally based caseworker in 2008. A Petersburg-based caseworker is now responsible for Wrangell's community. ESCO's seen overworked and burnt out caseworkers. Even if that wasn't the case, she says there's no substitute for a local presence.
So having someone with boots on the ground here that I know that they are intimately connected with resources and families, for me, I feel like it's a game changer.
The school district and city agreed, and they got to work.
We just felt like it was time to really start advocating.
Lisa Von Bargen is Wrangell's city manager. She and the mayor reached out to the state. After positive meetings with OCS officials, Representative Dan Ortez, an independent lawmaker from Ketchikan, proposed a budget amendment calling for adding a half-time state social worker. With testimony from the community, Ortez says the line item wasn't a hard sell to his fellow legislators. So far, it's passed in the House Finance Committee.
You know, I think Wrangell did the best job of any community in my district of communicating with the House Finance Committee their concerns and their needs.
But it will need to survive a House floor vote, get support in the state Senate, and survive the threat of the governor's line item veto power. The position could cost about $58,000 to the state. Federal programs would help out, too. And the city of Wrangell has offered office space, gratis. Wrangell city officials say they're also brainstorming how to provide parole supervision, a diversion program, and adult protective services. In Wrangell, I'm June Loeffler.
A former state lawmaker has been hired by the Department of Revenue. Eagle River Republican Anna McKinnon says she started last week as a special assistant to the commissioner. McKinnon left the legislature in 2018. In her new role, McKinnon will join the boards of two state corporations, the Alaska Energy Authority, which invests in projects that reduce the cost of energy in Alaska, and Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, which focuses on economic growth and finances businesses in the state. For now, she's working to catch up on the two corporations.
I've been fairly disconnected over the past year, and so understanding what has happened with the organizations and how they're investing in communities across Alaska and going back in and checking on the processes that they're using is what I'm doing right now.
McKinnon and a spokesperson for the Department of Revenue say that in her new role, she'll be working on special projects. Deputy Commissioner Mike Barnhill says they're looking for projects that fit her areas of expertise, likely in the Treasury and Tax Divisions. McKinnon led the Senate Finance Committee for 5 years. Her husband is John McKinnon, the Commissioner of the Department of Transportation. And finally, a 19-year-old Anchorage athlete did something yesterday that's never been done before. He became the first American man to win a race at the World Junior Championships of cross-country skiing.
Camera, come on!
That's the sound of members of the U.S. cross-country ski team watching Gus Schumacher on TV as he won the race in Germany for skiers 20 years old and under. Schumacher told the skiing website FasterSkier.com that he's been eyeing a podium finish since the previous winter.
Last year I had written at the top of my training log Junior Worlds medal, and this year just in black and white win World Juniors, so I've been staring at that.
Schumacher's finish was one of several impressive American results at the championships yesterday. 20-year-old Luke Jaeger, who grew up in Anchorage and now attends the University of Utah, finished 10th yesterday. He teamed up with Schumacher last year to win a gold medal for the U.S. in the relay. That's it for the KTOO News Update for Tuesday, March 3rd, 2020. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.